It's 106, and you're in tune with listener-powered radio, WNCW. My name is Joe Kendrick, and it is indeed an honor to be sitting across from Fred Tackett and Paul Barrere today as they get set to play tonight at the Grey Eagle in Asheville. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey there. How you doing, man?
Playing an acoustic show tonight. Can you give us a little preview?
Absolutely. Here's a little sailing shoes. And they go.
All right, Sailing Shoes. We're live with Paul Barrere and Fred Tackett on WNCW. And that is just a little flavor of what you can experience tonight. They're playing in Asheville. Sailing Shoes, of course, one of the all-time great Little Feat tunes. And rumor has it that Lowell George kind of covered that song with Van Dyke Parks. Is there any truth to that?
I don't know that Van Dyke had a part of it other than the arrangement.
Yeah, he was arranging it.
Yeah, but... Yeah, and Van Dyke's arrangement that he recorded was pretty interesting,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, but, yeah, actually, Lowell wrote that. It's one of my favorites. Lowell had asked me to audition as the bass player in 1969 for Little Feat, and I didn't know how to play the bass, so I failed miserably at it, and he said, well, okay. I said, if you ever need a guitar player, let me know. And when they released Sailing Shoes, Roy Estrada, who was the bass player, decided it would be a good career move to leave Little Feat and join Captain Beefheart.
Yeah, right.
So they expanded the band, and Lowell came to me, and he gave me the record, Sailing Shoes, and said, if you can learn all these songs, you're in the band. And I said, great. So,
how long did that take?
Not long. I wore that thing out, man, about 2 days.
Yeah, right.
I was playing our Spoonful of Blues. We have a blues feature weekdays in the noon hour, and we have a whole hour of blues on Monday and a bunch of blues on Saturday night. And just all through the mix, but was playing some of your influences. So I was going to Jimmy Reed and Albert King and folks like that. So I understand that, especially you, Paul, you learned how to play guitar listening to like your brother's records of Fats Domino and so forth.
Absolutely. And Jimmy Reed. Jimmy Reed music was really what drew me to the guitar. My parents, being the good parents that they were, made me take piano lessons from the time I was 6 until I was 11 when I said, enough, I can't sit at this piano every day for an hour anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking for an instrument. And my oldest brother had a party, and there was a guy there playing this beautiful Gibson guitar. And he's playing all these Jimmy Reed songs, and every chick at the party was standing around him, and I said, that must be it.
Yeah, when I was in high school, man, it was all Jimmy Reed. They didn't even ask for songs. They just say, can you play some Jimmy Reed? Because anybody could play. You heard it and you went, I can do that, which is what great music is. When you hear a great song, you get this feeling like, I could sing like that. I could do that. And when it's really great, too good, it's like, yeah, that's pretty good, but I don't know. When you hear something you kind of relate to, you're like, I could do that. That's when it's like getting in there. You know?
Yeah.
That's the real deal.
And, you know, from there I started exploring the old blues people like Mississippi John Hurt was one of the early influences that I had. And Muddy Waters, of course, and then got into the electric blues and stuff. And Albert Beebe and Freddie King. As I used to call them, the King family.
Yeah, man.
But they weren't.
No, but they're not King, right? But I got B.B. King records. Ray Charles was that guy. Ray Charles and James Brown when I was in high school, and that was it. I used to follow James Brown all over Arkansas, man. Listen to him play.
Well, Paul, you learned to play by ear, though.
Yeah. Yeah, which is hard because the ears are short and they're played by ear.
Yeah. It's hard to reach the strings. Everybody plays by ear, man. There's a very small minority of guitar players that actually, you know, learned how to read music and stuff.
I took a lot of piano growing up, and never was able to play by ear. I could read, but I wonder if that could be taught in any way, or is it just you just can or you can't?
I don't think you can teach somebody to play by ear. I think that's one of the things that's kind of inherent in different personalities. My grandfather was a virtuoso flute player who was brought to the United States in 1903. All he could do was read. He couldn't improvise a lick. And all the years that I took piano lessons, I would have the teacher play the piece. And then I could look at the music. I could pick out the notes, and I could go through it, and then I'd hear it, you know, from what he played, and then I could start to play it. Mm-hmm. And had them all confused, thinking I was reading it.
Yeah, I know. People go for years like that. I had a good friend who was a tuba player with the L.A. Philharmonic. He's same condition, so I wrote a piece for tuba and rock band just so that he could jam with us, you know. And now people, tuba players all over the world try to play this thing, but this guy, it was ridiculous. It would be hard for a trumpet player to play, but this guy was a virtuoso tubist.
I think this is what really makes, you know, the duet thing work so well is, like, you know, we come from similar musical backgrounds, but Fred He's the only cat I know who can play multitude of instruments and read charts for all of them, and, although he doesn't want to. So we tend to, you know, we'll do these Little Feet songs as a duet. I mean, Two Trains with a mandolin is pretty special, I got to tell you. And we'll probably do that tonight.
Yeah, we'll do that tonight, huh?
Yeah. And so we just have fun with it. It's like honky-tonking again.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your musical background coming up, Fred.
Oh, my father and my brother were trumpet players, so the first thing we were just talking about, I went on an interview tour of Amoeba Records and went through my collection. The first records I had were an album of 78s by a trumpet player named Buck Clayton and Kid Ory. I grew up listening to Dixieland music and then Elvis Presley, I was a trumpet player, and then Elvis Presley came along when I was 12, and I said, give me a guitar, you know. And I was a drummer as well for many, 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 many years. I played drums, and I went down to college in East Texas and North Texas, and then went up to Oklahoma City and met group of Filipinos that took me, a musical act that took me to Hawaii, where I met Jimmy Webb, who was from, had just written, he was 21, I was 20, 21, and he'd just written Up, Up, and Away in My Beautiful Balloon, and had gotten his first money for it, and hired me to come to L.A. in 1967, Summer of Love, and I worked with him for 5 or 6 years doing an album called Words and Music, which is just the two of us playing all the instruments and him doing his thing, and through him, my wife brought Lowell George, lived next door to Lowell George, and brought him over to play sitar, because he only played sitar at that point. He didn't. He was studying at Ravi Shankar's Kanara School in Los Angeles. So he came downstairs, and Lowell's sitting all dressed in white in the living room playing Indian music.
Robes.
Yes, in flowing robes, man. He looked a lot like that guy, that blind dude in Japan with the sarin gas.
Oh, God.
It looked a lot like him. But anyway, he, you know, I said, oh, man, you know, we could tune that to some, like, you know, some bizarre tunings and do some stuff. And Lowell's, oh, no, I only play traditional Indian music. And then about 2 weeks later, he was in the Standells. That was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So,
traditional Indian.
So Jimmy Webb and myself and Lowell all were, you know, we're all buddies. And we just hung out and shared songs together. And I played a song I wrote called Fool Yourself. And Lowell said, oh, I'm going to put that on my Dixie Chicken album. And that's how I met Paul, and on that recording session, I went down to play acoustic guitar on it, and we've been jamming together and doing session work and traveling all over the world ever since.
And if you don't know the name Jimmy Webb, you certainly know his music, because he is one of the all-time greatest songwriters in American history.
Great composer. I just saw him the other night on David Letterman.
Yeah, I had a thing. He was going to be there. Yeah, I mean, when I came to town, he had just written MacArthur Park, which he called his symphony, and was trying to get the association to cut it, and they wouldn't do it, so he got Richard Harris, almost out of spite. Said, I'll show you. I'll make a hit out of this with Richard, who can't
sing.
Seven-minute
song. In an era when nothing could be longer than 3 minutes, right?
Yeah,
right.
It was a huge hit. And now today, I mean, today it gets castigated as like, you know, oh, MacArthur Park is a terrible song. But it's really a great song. If you listen to it, it's a great song.
The orchestration
song.
Is fun.
Yeah. Grammy for the arrangement, you know. Oh. But, yeah, it's an amazing thing, you know.
You won't be doing MacArthur Park tonight, though.
No, right? No, we Maybe. Don't do it personally. You want to say it?
No, no.
Come on, you played it with Richard Harris a number of times.
I did. I toured with Richard Harris, which was hysterical. He's such a cool guy. And I toured on the road with him, where all I did was sit and well, he did his whole show, and then I would stand up and play a solo on the fast part of MacArthur Park, and then sit down, turn my amp off, and practice while he told stories and had this big symphony orchestra. It was great. It lasted about 3 weeks. The tour was canceled.
Oh, another cancellation tour.
Yeah, Richard was a great, great lad.
Yeah, buddy.
How about another song?
Sure.
What shall we do?
Well, you got a mandolin, but we could do anything on mandolin.
Yeah. Well, we could do Two Trains. We could do Trouble. We could do.
Let's do some a little upbeat. You want to do Down on the Farm or Feast Don't Fail Me Now?
Let's do Feast Don't Fail Me Now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fail me now. Live on WNCW. Yes, we're here with Fred Tackett and Paul Barrere. And from Little Feet, that record released 40 years ago in the year 1974. And that record was pivotal in that it showcased a lot of songwriting other than Lowell George, including yourself, Paul. You had co-written that tune, one of my favorite Little Feet tunes, Skin It Back, and other folks joining in. So, you know, Lowell was well known for being in the Frank Zappa School of Management, at the beginning at least, and being the top-down sort of model of man to do what I say, do it this way. But I think that was seen as a kind of a more democratic kind of, you know, dawning for the band. Is there any truth to that?
You know, I think it's a misconception that he demanded that we do it his way. You know, he had a set way of wanting to do things a certain way, but he always gave you room to, you know. On my very first recording, Dixie Chicken, we did On Your Way Down. He pointed at me and says, I want you to do the solo on this. Here, we're going to jimmy your little amp up into a Leslie, and we'll just cut it live. And I said, great, you know. So he was always very generous. I mean, but he did want to have control over the mixing and things like that, which is understandable, you know. But he did give us more and more rope to hang ourselves with as years moved on. Always fun.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite memories surrounding that release and some of the tours or some of the recording sessions?
Oh, God. There's some unrepeatable, and then there's...
some things will remain unsaid, huh?
Well, touring, you know, in the early days, especially like when we'd go to Europe and stuff, and we were the darlings of the press the first time through, and then the second time through, we were like the brunt of the press. Interesting, the European press. Mm-hmm. But it was always neat to do these shows, like with the Pink Pop Festival, which they just re-released... Little Feet just released on a DVD, and the Rock Palace show and so forth. And we come in and we were just a bunch of cut-ups from L.A. I mean,
yeah,
you know, there's this very serious you know, interviewer from Germany trying to interview Lowell, talking about the slide, you know. And Lowell's going, yeah.
Eleven sixteenths.
Socket wrench.
Get it anywhere. If you lose it, you can buy one anywhere.
You know, it was, I don't think we took it all that serious most of the time. And anytime we did it, it would always cause a fight. So it was like, let's keep it light, boys.
Well, there were a lot of great, colorful stories of Little Feet in those days. You know, the Dixie Chicken record, was that when you had the sponsorship with the chicken restaurant and then the chicken mascot or whatever following you around and stuff? Tell us about that.
Well, actually, what it was the cats at Warner Brothers at the time thought it would be a good thing to do when we were in Atlanta to go around to radio stations dressed up in waiters and busboy outfits, and they put Lowell in a chicken suit, and he wouldn't wear the hat, the head. I said, I'll wear the head, you know. Give me that thing. And it was like, put my Ray-Bans over him, and it was like, who is that? Nobody knows, you know. But when they made up these Kentucky Fried Chicken boxes, only except instead of Kentucky Fried Chicken, it was the Dixie Chicken Girl, and it said finger picking good on it. And it was like, it was a big, foolish thing to do, to say the least. And then, you know, we did all these interviews and stuff at these radio stations, and then we found out that there was no records in the store. And so it was like one of those things where Lowell got extremely mad at the company.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big challenge in that era of distribution, of getting, of being able to tour and then having the records in the town where you went. And it's hard to fathom that. These days, you know, where everything is distributed instantly, electronically, but then it was a real problem for a lot of people.
A real problem. And unless you were one of the biggies, you know. Mm-hmm.
They had record reps, you know, for each little area of towns, and, you know, several towns or several states sometimes, that one guy from, you know, that was hired by Warner Brothers, and he was generally kind of the live wire of the area, and they thought, you know, this is a guy who knows what's happening, in quotes, so they would hire him as a Warner rep, and they would just be a bunch of idiots most of the time. And he'd show up, and they wouldn't show up, and you're supposed to go to the interview, and the interview hasn't been done. And Lowell used to come back with a notebook, taking names, and I took names this time. I used to live, he lived in my house for a while, but before he got his own house, and it was on, he had to pass by my house to get to his house in Topanga Canyon. And he would come by and go fishing sometimes, and he'd come by and late, and he'd tell me, like, come back from a tour and say, I took names, man, I took names. I've got them all right in this book. I'm going to get them all. He was on it.
And it was fairly critical to get those album sales, to keep with your label and keep going forward to be able to continue to tour.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it was typical bureaucratic, you know, foul-ups in those days. And it's, you know, to me it's, you know, I miss the days of record stores. I really do, because they were really nice. But as far as getting new product in stores, it was, you know, that's where you got a lot of, hey, I'll give you a refrigerator if you, you know, rack this in the front of the store kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Not really payola.
And people would, you know, the record company would ship out hundreds of thousands of records to stores and, you know, playing it in the billboard. Oh, my gosh, we just got all these records. They're all, these things selling like hotcakes. And then in like 2 weeks, the record stores would send them all back as returns, you know. So it was all like false, kind of like a little false game going on all the time.
It, you know, music, it's pretty much the same, even though it's different now. I mean, with digital releases and so forth. If you were the major label, you're still going to, you know, bump up against some of that stuff. The people who are doing it themselves, the independents who are, like, just manufacturing their own product and selling it at gigs and selling it over the Internet, I think, you know, that's going to be one of the ways of the future. We were just talking about how there's a bunch of young acts out there and how hard it is in the music industry these days from, you know, getting good enough paying gigs to support yourself out on the road to actually selling your product.
It's a double-edged sword. It's good and it's bad. You know, there's good things because you can do it all yourself. You don't need a label. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, because, you know, time was, if you didn't have a label, you didn't have a record, and you really couldn't get past first base without that label. Now you can do it all yourself, but you have to do it all yourself, and you have to be pretty good at doing a lot of things that you may not be very good at.
Right.
Yeah, and it's also just this, like, amazing amount of material that people have to kind of, like, 8 million songs and no really direction on how to go about finding what you want to find. So, you know, there's good things, and, you know, there's arguments both sides. I was talking to my son, Miles Taggart, who's just put out his own little independent record, and we're talking about one, you know, the good part about having gatekeepers, it kind of keeps the quality up, if the gatekeeper's, like, you know, legit, of a record company, you know, so that like, you don't just have thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of songs running around and nobody knows what anything is. Two, the freedom of anybody can make a record, you know, which is great, too. So it's all in flux right now.
And we're loving that Miles Taggart record, by the way.
Oh, great. That, the Fool Who Wonders.
Yeah, that is a hit, man. We've been playing that for the past couple of weeks. It's brand new.
Well, we appreciate that. I'll tell him that, man. Yeah. I'll call him up and tell him that, man. He'll be excited about that.
He will be.
Yeah.
So tell us about life outside of Little Feet, outside of music. How's baseball doing for you guys this year?
Oh, baseball's doing great for me. I'm a Giants fan. Living in L.A., which has always been problematic, but I was indoctrinated as a Giants fan before any of those teams moved west, because my dad was from New York. And but it's, you know, it's a great race this year. I mean, there's four divisions where you know, the top two teams, it's anybody's crown, you know. So I'm enjoying it. I like it. You know, I thought it was funny when everybody got the soccer fever, or football fever, as they call it. You know, kind of went,
Yeah.
It's going to wind up
until
like
the U.S. was out of the competition, then it was like over, right? I live in California, and I'm pretty much a gardener, man. Gardener and stuff like that, you know. I don't do this much of the sports, but when I'm not out playing with Paul and the guys, I'm at home, like, gardening or working on 25 years worth of honeydew projects that I didn't get to do while we were on the road for 25 years.
Tell us about your garden. What kind of gardener are you?
Well, like I said, I live in California. But I have everything. I have lots of vegetables. I have a lot of things.
Fruit trees.
I have very much orchards. Lots of
I enjoy
trees.
The fruits of your growing expertise.
All that stuff.
A lot.
Yeah, no, actually, I have like 360 degrees. My house is just surrounded by gardens. We say my house is just a garden shed to the garden, really. And, we grow lots of vegetables and lots of composting and building dirt and just all that stuff. Mm. It's practically a small farm, you know.
We started farming in earnest more this year, and I've discovered that deer and rabbits really love your garden.
Oh, yeah.
And I figured out that I think that a solution of hot sauce will keep the deer from mowing down a lot of your vegetables.
Yeah.
It seemed to work yesterday, at least.
That's cool. We're chasing around little white cabbage moths everywhere now, man. With like nets. It's like the Marx Brothers running around trying to catch these little
cabbage. That's what you do, take cayenne pepper and water solution and just spray it on them.
Take a Tabasco sauce kind of sauce,
Diluted
in water, spray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The radio out one night. That did not work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're out there dancing and eating.
Yeah, I know, man.
Well, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, the reason that Fred and I have been able to do a lot of gigs is because it was a year ago in March that I had stopped touring with Little Feet because of hepatitis C. And I thought I was going to start undergoing a treatment way back then. And we just kept putting it off and putting it off until December when the new treatment came out without having to take the interferon. So I did the 6 months of that, which ended in June, and it worked. So far, so good. Knock wood. And I have to go through six more months of just blood work to make sure that the virus doesn't come back and so forth. So rather than, you know, go on the road with Little Feet and get on a bus for 3-4 weeks at a time, or even 2 weeks, which would have been brutal, we've just done a couple of weekends. We started April, late April, and just doing weekends, going out and playing gigs and, you know, having a lot of fun just doing our little honky-tonking thing.
So you're going to fly back. You're doing short trips.
Yeah, short trips.
short trips with a couple of weeks at home. You know, usually we've been doing like a couple of weekends a month for the last couple months, just to
summertime.
Yeah, that's what it is. But in the wintertime, we're gonna cut it back to like one weekend a month, and then probably mid-November we'll just shut it down until
spring. So it's time. Nice again.
Yeah,
until it's too nice hard again. To travel. I mean, my gosh, you go driving out, and man, the next thing you know is a hurricane and the tornadoes and just amazing things going down. I've driven through forest fires, tornadoes.
Yeah,
it's just crazy, crazy now.
Well, I wish you well on your recovery, Paul. You know,
thank you.
Alejandro Escovedo beat hepatitis C.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he went through, I think, the same process that you're going through.
Yeah. And, it, you know, everybody I know who is on trials, studies, since the drug is so new, who have, you know, been like a year from treatment, they're all still very clear of the virus, which is amazing to me. You know, the drug companies themselves are finally starting to get into these genome technologies that target specific, you know, viruses. So they're not just pumping you full of, like, interferon, which is killing everything in your system, which makes you feel like crap, you know. And it just zeroes in on the specific proteins that cause that virus. And they're going to start doing the same thing for cancers. I mean, they probably already are. It's good.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, some of their drugs, some of my drugs. It's okay. What?
We're live with Paul Barrera, Fred Tackett on WNCW, and they're playing at the Great Eagle in Asheville tonight. It's about a 8 o'clock show. It's just you two, right?
Yeah, I believe that's it. And then we'll be in Winston-Salem Friday, and then Wilmington on Saturday, and fly home Sunday. Piece of cake. For a couple of old guys?
Yeah.
It's nice.
Well, you've got one more song for us?
Sure. We'll be right back.
Too much fun.
About as silly as it gets.
Yeah, deep down in the woods. Fred Tech at Paul Verreer, live on WNCW, playing at the Great Eagle in Asheville tonight. Find out all about them, I imagine, through littlefeet.net. That would be a good place to start.
Or paulandfred.net. Or
just come on down and see us tonight. Keep it simple. Get in your car, come down, buy a drink, and let's get down.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have fun.
We very much appreciate you coming to Spindell this afternoon.
Thank you.